Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to Wood Talk. Now here are three guys who always turn the other cheek when cleaning up tenons. Mark, Shannon, and Matt.
Well, what's happening, everybody? It's show number 565, and on today's show we're talking about power jointers versus jointer planes, finishing shop walls, which smoothing plane, and regretting Harvey purchases. Ding, 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 ding. All right. But before we get to that, we want to let you know that Wood Talk is brought to you by... Oh, I'm sorry. I read that wrong. I'm sorry. I'm going to do it again. Ready? And regretting Harvey purchases?
There you go.
That is that a little bit better? Yeah. Okay, that's actually more accurate. Okay, but before we get to that, we want to let you know that Wood Talk is brought to you by Rockler. Rockler's been helping customers create with confidence for over 65 years. Rockler's giving away a $250 gift card to one lucky Wood Talk listener. Enter for your chance to win before January 31st at rockler.com/woodtalk.
And if you want to help support the show, you can do so. You can head over to patreon.com/woodtalk. patreon.com/woodtalk and sign up to become a patron of this beautiful, incredibly sexy show that we do. Which you're listening to right now in those ear holes of yours. This time we're thanking Jeff Stewart, Chris Labushesky, and...
Sure.
Yep.
Herschel Woodcraft.
Labushesky. I would imagine...
I broke it up phonetically. Labushesky,
maybe?
Labushesky, maybe?
No.
I like Labushesky.
Let's go with Labushesky. Labushesky.
Sounds way better.
Christoph Labushesky.
You're welcome for this friendly woodworker improvement skill I have.
From northern Siberia.
That's pretty good. Nicely done. All right. Well, we have a few... pieces of news and announcements, and unfortunately, once in a while, we do have to have a very sad announcement that a good member of the community, a great craftsman, and I knew him for his saws and have one of his saws, Eric Florip, he passed away recently, and I know he was sick for a while, but I also think if my memory serves, this came on quite fast. What he was dealing with, and our condolences go out to his family and friends and everybody who must be dealing with the terrible situation right now, especially this time of year, of course, is always really rough. So our condolences go out. We talked about this a little bit offline. I have one of his saws. Shannon's been hoping to try one, so I think I might just send it to Shannon so he can experiment with it. But he made great saws. I have one of his dovetail saws.
No, heard from a lot of people that you got to try these are amazing. These are amazing. And it was always one of those things where like we would exchange DMs and it'd be like, yeah, mm-hmm. Let's do this. And all right, well, let's catch up next week or whatever. And it just never happened. And it's just one of those really sad things now. It's like,
Sure. Yeah. And it was always like an underdog kind of story situation where there's a lot of saw makers out there, but it was like him doing his thing and it's actually a really good saw. It was just a fun thing to support. And wish everybody over there the best. It's always sad to get news like that.
Yeah, I have a couple of his marking gauges, and I like them a lot.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
And I miss his sarcasm. He had this like very special sarcastic wit about him.
You know, I didn't get to know really, the guy.
It was so always really entertaining. It's like, you know how you and I are sarcastic back and forth on social media sometimes?
No.
When you love me, you do yes. treat me that way? It's like that, but like even more
that's
so.
That's how I show affection.
He was very good about that. And I'm like, I can appreciate like a very sarcastic person.
Yeah, yeah. So we had I wish I would have gotten to know him better because that sounds like someone I would really like.
Yes.
Well,
absolutely.
Yeah. It's a real bummer. So all the best to his family and friends. And unfortunately, it's always hard to transition to things that are a little bit lighter, but that's what the show is about. So we are going to move on. I do have to make a quick announcement about a book signing and a meet and greet that I'm going to be having at Matt's house. No, just
Sweet.
Kidding.
Yeah, meet my kids?
Yeah. No, I'm having a little book signing meet and greet at the St. Louis Other Rockler, a.k.a. Woodcraft.
Nice.
So the local Woodcraft store got in touch with us, asked if we want to come and do a meet and greet, and I said as long as I could bring some books and sell them, and so we'll be there.
It's always
well,
because you have so
anything
many.
But mine.
I mean, that's what I was kind of getting at. Is it your own books or just
just
know what
trying
to get rid
of?
I got some shelves of stuff I got to get rid of.
I got some J.R.R. Tolkien over there. I got a barbecue Bible.
Flexner so finishing books from the
early 2000s. I'll sign any book. I don't care.
There you go. Yeah, right.
Bring any book and I'll sign it. Nicole and I will both be there. 9 a.m. I believe is the time for that. So that should be a fun little event. So if you're in the area, in the Missouri, St. Louis, Missouri area, please come out. Come see us. Come hang out. It'll be a lot of fun.
I got a little kind of last minute one. I wasn't sure that this was going to happen or not. But you know the woodworking show? Like the woodworking show?
The woodworking shows?
Yeah, that's in Baltimore right now. And I originally was not going to be able to get out there. But I am, in fact. Well, it's snowing kind of sort of right now, but as long as we have typical Maryland weather and that snow turns to rain and we don't get any accumulation, I will be there tomorrow. I had several people who said, are you coming out? Let me know if you're coming out. Let's hook up. So no official meetup, but I will be there. If you're there, come find me amongst all the sea of people. Be happy to
nice.
Talk to you.
If you do see Shannon, something he really enjoys, if you just go behind him and pinch his butt, he likes that. Big fan. It's a great way to start a conversation.
Big fan. Yeah.
That's what I do every time. All right, you want to get this last piece of news, Shannon?
I love the fact that I just made that announcement about something happening tomorrow, and this show won't drop until, what, a week?
Oh, that's right.
Nice. Right on.
Never mind.
Well done, sir. Well, hopefully someone pinched your butt anyway.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, hopefully. I'll report back.
Please.
I'll report back on the butt pinching. All right. This is from Mark. He says, any comments regarding the acquisition of Fine Woodworking Magazine by Active Interest Media, AIM? I didn't know that's what AIM stood for. Now I know.
I thought it was AOL Instant Messenger.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
For those of us who are old.
And for those of you who don't know, AIM also owns Woodsmith and ShopNotes. So basically ShopNotes, Woodsmith, Fine Woodworking.
Don't they also own
Popular Woodworking? Yeah, I was just going to say. I thought
they did.
Yeah. So this is just one big conglomerate that owns almost all of the currently active woodworking magazines. Do we have comments on that? I don't know.
That's all of them, right? All the ones that are actually being published still?
Wood?
Well, I mean, there's always a few of those interesting outliers. Like you go to the bookstore into the periodical section, you might see some stuff that we probably never subscribed to, but they've been doing their thing for a while. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I have
zero comments.
Oh,
I
Wood
haven't
Magazine.
Picked up a yeah, Wood
and
Magazine
Woodworkers
is still
Journal.
There, right? And Wood yeah. But that's exactly why I have no comments. Like I couldn't even tell you who's being published. I mean, I still go to the Fine Woodworking website a fair bit.
Yeah.
I apologize, Logan. I don't go to the Popular Woodworking website as much because there's too many pop-ups. Sorry.
Wow.
But yeah, I mean,
I guess
I still delve into the, you know, the subscription side of the Fine Woodworking. Basically every single issue is there. I've really not had a need to have a print subscription in quite some time. Plus I haven't been into a bookstore in quite a while to actually that's what I used to do is like browse the periodical rack and look at get my woodworking magazine fixed there. So yeah, sorry. Yeah. No comment.
Well, and I mean, at this point, at this stage, I mean, maybe 15 years ago, if this was a topic on the show, we'd be like, and now, fine. Because there was always this sort of, not an animosity, but definitely a little bit of a competitive sort of thing going on between your fine woodworking people and your pop woodworking people.
Yeah.
Those always seem like the two pinnacles, right? Two different personalities, if you would give a company a personality. But now, again, same thing. Someone like Logan, great person. All the people who are currently working at these magazines, I don't mean this to sound bad against them, but the personalities of those magazines were formed by all the different editors and the people who wrote for the magazines that gave it a personality. Right. And they've had so much turnover in the last 10 plus years, and so much of this has watered things down to the point where who actually is writing there anymore? I don't know. Yeah. You know, so it's really hard to follow.
Most of the quote old guard popular woodworking have now written for Fine Woodworking. You know,
yeah, they're either
Megan
in Fine
Chris
Woodworking
have both shown up
or
in
just
Fine
Lost Art Press.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. So it's I don't know, it all blends together. But I mean, isn't it kind of like inevitable? Is this the writing on the wall? They will eventually go away. But it seems to me the only way to make sense in the publishing market anymore is just to continue to acquire. Like, you're not trying to grow your own product anymore. You just go and acquire the other people and consolidate, because everybody's audiences are getting smaller and smaller and smaller. So, I don't know. Nail in the coffin. Yeah,
we'll just see what happens. Ultimately, I mean, if these things are shrinking and now it's all under one umbrella, but they continue to let them operate independently and do what they do best. Great. That's awesome. You know, maybe it means they'll have more funding. I don't always want to, like, you know, be negative about these things, because sometimes acquisitions can actually be helpful.
I think with this acquisition, it's more like they're under the umbrella. They're buying the back catalog and all the intellectual property that goes along with it, so they can repackage and repurpose existing stuff. Because as far as the magazine stuff go, I mean, they could reprint an article from 15 years ago and most people have no idea that it's not brand new.
That's the great thing about woodworking, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Heck yeah.
Well, and seriously, that's
who's this new author? Oh, it's Glenn Huey. Oh, I never heard of him before.
Yeah. I never heard of this guy.
Right. I got a YouTube.
What's this? I never heard of this person before. Who's this new up and coming author?
This new up and coming guy, Sam Maloof. Yeah, sounds really interesting.
And this is exactly what I was going to say. Well, not Sam Maloof, but I had a guy ask me if I knew about this Hungarian guy who cuts dovetails with a frame saw. It's amazing. Oh, you got to check this guy out. And I was like, you mean Brent Klaus?
Klaus?
He's up for
really?
Cover.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, since the memory of most woodworkers starts in 2006, you know, from online education, you can probably find a lot of people that they would have no idea who they are.
I think that's even pushing it for most people these days.
Yeah.
2006.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I agree.
Judging from
I think it's
comments
COVID,
I get on
COVID since, basically 2020 on at this point now.
Yeah. And it's generally a group of people who are so certain of that they know a thing that they really do not know. But they want to let you know how much they don't know it. So
they're very certain of themselves.
Yes. Yeah. 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 It's fun. Hey, we should do a whole show on that. Yeah, okay. Well, that's it for the. We probably have, yeah.
And if we have, it doesn't matter. According to Matt, we can just do it again.
That's true, because everybody's
new. We don't
have
to do it again. We just plug it back in. We just hit the, like, just insert it in.
There we go.
Yeah, just cut and paste it?
Yeah.
Todd, can you cut and paste the last time we talked about that right into this spot right here, please?
Yeah. Good luck finding it.
No! I tried to find something.
A very well indexed back catalog. I'm like, out.
Yeah. I tried to find something earlier today and I was like, nope, not happening. Like, we just don't put enough information in the notes to find those things. So it's fine. It's all good. All right, let's get to what's on the bench. For me, I'm working on Ava's Vanity still. And I am experiencing that thing that happens when, you know, we kind of warn people against this. Don't take your project too far along and then leave it sit before it becomes like part of an assembly. Because if you do that, things tend to move. They don't stay flat. You get a little cupping. You get your joinery that kind of
expands. I was wondering where you're going with that one.
I was like,
you forget what you did? Is that where he's going with this?
Well, there's that too.
That could be. Yes.
That happens too.
Well, do you
what
guys,
was I doing
like,
again?
Especially, we had a holiday break, right? So I knew I was going to be away for a while. I will do this because it's not just the project itself. It's what we're doing with the documentation of the project. So I need to know where I left off. Literally, what was the last thing I said?
Mm-hmm.
And the good thing about what we do is I could usually go find the clip. And then that will refresh my memory on where I was.
I can start watching clips. What was the last segment I filmed? Oh, yeah, okay.
Right. I will go down and just write down what it was I did and then what if I were staying in the shop, what that next thing would have been. And then that usually helps, like, get my head back in the game. But no, I'm speaking specifically about, like, you're doing a dovetailed case. You cut your dovetails. Everything's good. But you're not ready to do the assembly because you have two or three other things to do to those boards before the assembly. And then you go on vacation. And when you come back, those boards are no longer perfectly flat. You know, you might have a little bit of cupping here and there. Your dovetails may have swelled or shrunk, depending on the conditions. And you go to put things back together, and suddenly it's not all fitting the way it did before. That's kind of what I'm dealing with Ava's vanity here and a bunch of dovetailed casework and things like that. That's just, it's not so bad that it's ruining anything, but it's definitely taking some of the fun out of it. The accuracy that I had before is like not as good anymore. So I'm now
fun. What are you talking about?
Huh? Mm-hmm. What? I like having fun.
Who cares what you like?
It's my shop. I care what I like. So yeah, I'm trying to get through that just powering through it now at this point. But my goal originally was to get this thing done for Christmas, and I had it laid out on a schedule, and it made me realize that, yes,
will.
I could.
Just different Christmas.
Yes, yeah. It'll be next Christmas. I could have done it, but that also means with my brother was in from out of town, my mom was here, like I would have been in the shop the whole time, and that's not how I wanted to spend my holidays. So it got delayed. But that's it for me.
All right.
What about you, Shannon?
I'm normally quite happy with the size of my shop. People ask me a lot, like, you know, do you wish you had a bigger shop? And I've gotten so used to the space that I have and so well optimized that it's pretty good until now. I put a deposit down on basically my house is getting an entire facelift, new siding, new roof, new windows, new doors, everything. It's been a nightmare getting it scheduled, getting the actual parts, the siding and stuff in. I guess supply chain is still a very big issue. Also, when you tend to, if I contracted with like a big home remodeling company, I probably would have paid a lot more money and probably would have gotten done faster. I went with a mom and pop company. I really liked the people, but you know, when they're buying one house of siding at a time, the delays are pretty bad. So I've been waiting for 6 months now, and this is definitely not a criticism on this company. I like these people. They've been really good about it. It's just as things kind of trickle in, I've had to find a place to put them. So I have, I have shingles in my shop. I have a front door, and that includes both side lights. So the complete casement, it's 88 inches wide. That's basically
in your shop too?
It's in my shop. It's leaning up against my grizzly planer. So if
shop,
anybody who's seen my shop,
that's a big
door. No, it's really not. So
that's a big
picture
door.
My shop. My workbench is smack dab in the middle of the shop, and I've got about 3 feet on either side long edge of the workbench. Well, now I've got a casement door wedged in between the planer and the bench, so I can't go around the bench clockwise. I can't get through there. In the back of the shop, I have the back door, the French door, in its casement leaning up against the wall. I can kind of squeeze by that if I like turn on edge and go through from there. But then I've got boxes of like the new front light fixture, the new rear light fixture, all the door hardware piled up in boxes. Of course, the bundles of shingles are in the way. The siding hasn't shown up yet. Hopefully when that shows up, like, is somebody going to come and steal my siding? Hopefully they can just put that out front because there's really no space for it. But yeah, it's kind of changed things. I went out there the other day, and my workbench has a case piece on it that I'm actually trying to cut edge banding for. I've got this hunk of a 12-quarter Iroko that I'm slicing strips off of them and I turn into edge banding. And I'm like, you know what? I can go do that. But I physically couldn't get over to the saw bench without like climbing over stuff. And I was just like, this is ridiculous. So I turned around and went back into the shop, and I'm overhauling the cockpit on my triathlon bike. That's what's on my bench right now. New aero bars, new hydraulic brakes. So yeah, it's next to my woodworking shop, so that kind of counts. I'm using tools, using specialized tools, but part tools that are specialized. But yeah,
that's a biker joke.
Yeah, it's frustrating because I was like really yesterday, especially I got finished with work and I was like, I can't wait to get in the shop. I knew exactly what I was going to do, and then I was like, oh right, damn it, I can't move around.
Yeah, that's
around.
Frustrating.
So, oh well, you know, such is life.
All right, Matt, what about you?
Park Tools is based here.
Yes, they are.
Are they really?
They are.
Yeah, and the owner contacted me, I think, it must have been like 4 years ago now, because he was making a bassinet.
Nice.
No kidding. That's cool.
Yeah, I was like, this is an interesting crossover. You guys are like into bikes and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, what a lost opportunity. You don't even ride a bike.
I don't even
actually,
ride a bike.
You do. I did see you ride a bike once. There was like a family picture of you guys on your bikes.
Was it a banana seat?
Yeah, it was. Big banana seat. He had a baseball card in the spokes, too. It was pretty sweet. Cool.
Right on the pegs.
Yep.
I would really want one of those. Like, as like an around-the-town commuter. That'd be fun. I could go for that.
Yeah, that'd be great. Can't wait to see it.
Well, I'm working on cabinets still.
Still. I feel like you're going to be doing that for a while.
Yeah, probably. Yeah,
I'm getting towards the end here. I was talking to Brad yesterday about, like, everything's going on. I'm like, it's not that bad. It doesn't feel so monotonous because like every single cabinet is different and has its own weird, unique challenge going on with it. So, which is good and bad because it's like every single cabinet is its own project. It's like its own massive undertaking of like a single project. Like, if that was the only project, great. I'd be fine. Like it's that big project and then like another one that's got the same exact challenges, same amount of time frame. But it's, I'm in the shop. I'm kind of generally enjoying things, so it's
good.
Feels pretty good. I made this giant appliance garage cabinet that has this retractable pocket door thing on it, and the instructions are kind of weird. Like this weird thing for me. Like the instructions for that pocket door are technically very good. All of the information is there, but holy hell, good luck finding what you're looking for.
Yeah,
or figuring out what they're trying to show you because it's a non-linguistical instruction manual. It's all diagrams and pictures.
And correct me if I'm wrong, this is very expensive hardware too, probably.
The hardware mechanism was $1,800.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know why it's so funny. Like we run into this at the millwork house because they do a lot of nothing they do, custom doors and everything. It's all super high-end German or some sort of European manufactured. Yeah. And the instructions, 100% of the time, like they're there. Like there are instructions included. There are some pictures. Yeah, it makes IKEA look like it makes a lot of sense.
The manual is 65 pages. That's the instructions. And you're like, oh, what the hell is this hardware? And at least when you approach that, you're like, this is going to be like challenging and ridiculous. And at first, I feel like it's like your like expectations are like way the hell up here. Like this is going to be super complicated. And as you kind of get into it, you're like, okay, this isn't that bad. Then you're like, why the hell can they make this easier? Or like have some kind of more step-by-step, any kind of instructions that like even a video that someone like walks you through, like the intricacies of setting this up. Cause all the measurements are going to be different depending on whatever your install size is, which is fine. But like everything's got acronyms now. Like I literally took a card. I wrote all the acronyms out. So I had that with me as I was going through the manual. Cause I got sick of flipping back to the key to see what all these all these acronyms meant.
It's all shorthand.
Okay, well, this is whatever. Anyway, I spent a few hours with it. It makes a lot more sense to me now. I don't know. I'll never do it again because I don't know when I would ever do one of these pocket doors. It was kind of like building the Rubola the first time. I'm like, yeah, it took a really long time because I'm like, I don't really know what I'm doing. And you kind of go through the instructions, like you read the instructions, rewatch the instructions, you go through it, you like lay it out and blah, blah, blah. And by the end, I'd be like, oh, yeah, it wasn't that bad. I could do that again really quickly. But when the hell are you ever going to make another workbench? That's the whole point of that Rubola workbench. Like, that's your lifetime bench. That's how I felt with this hardware. I haven't felt that feeling in a long time.
Yeah. Well, we talked about this offline with bigger brands of tools and, like, deeper industry, higher quality tools, where there's an expectation as consumers that you go to that level. You go, well, I mean, it's got to be the best instructions and they're going to give me as much hand holding as I could possibly need. But it seems like the opposite happens when you go to the higher quality stuff. There is sort of an implied expectation that you know what you're doing. Don't need all the instructions for setting up that, you know, $5,000 bandsaw because you can afford a $5,000 bandsaw. You should know what the heck you're doing. Yeah. So it's like same thing with some of this advanced hardware. I mean, even as simple as undermount drawer slides, the instructions, because they have to accommodate every possible scenario that could happen. It's so confusing the first time you do it. And then, like you said, you look at it afterwards, you go, well, this really wasn't that bad. All they had to do was say it this way, and I would have understood it. But they don't have to worry about that. They're delivering that product mostly to industry pros who already know how to install it.
There's the keep going up that spectrum when you get into the $100,000 piece of equipment. They don't give you any instructions at all, but they send a team.
Yeah, you get a guy.
They send like three guys and they spend like a week with you showing you how to set it up and how do you maintain it. And yeah, that's the other end. So it does get better. You just have to spend $100,000, $200,000.
Get over that hump.
Yeah. We got a manual that's like a phone book for our flood coder machine, and it's still shrink wrapped because like the flood coder was delivered with Steve, and Steve showed us how to use it and walked us through it. And the we had problems. You call Steve. Number. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. We just written in Sharpie on the plastic. Here's Steve's number. Call him. Yeah. It's sitting on top of the machine. No one's opened it yet.
Nice. All right. Well, speaking of tools, quality, and expectations, Matt and I are going to join forces here to give you guys a little Harvey update.
It's a collab.
It's a collab. We're going to collab. I love it. So who wants to go first?
You got yours first, so why don't you go first?
Okay. So I purchased, if you follow me on Instagram, you might have seen this. I did purchase the latest Harvey miter gauge to serve as sort of a supplement to my review and hopefully redeem them in a sense. Not that they need my redemption, but I felt like it was a new attempt at making a better version of what they had. I felt like I owed it to myself as well as to other people to review the new one. So I got that. I also got their Ambassador 14-inch bandsaw. We talked about that in the last show. It was one of the Black Friday sale things that I picked up. The bandsaw did have a problem, but it was a shipping issue, damage that occurred during shipping. They were really attentive and helpful with that, got me a new bolt that I needed, a little pin, got that thing assembled. And I will say just overall, pretty impressed with this bandsaw. Very sturdy. The vibration is absolutely minimal. Cut quality is really good. And so far, so good on the bandsaw. Nothing bad to say about that at all. The miter gauge has been interesting. I've already sent mine back and had one sent back to me that they had to go over carefully to make sure it was not flawed as the first one was. They improved a lot. They fixed a lot of things that I thought were wrong with it and improved some of the things. Like even if they didn't totally fix something, it's better on this one. So I actually like it a lot. But in the process of making changes, there were two things I found that were new flaws. And so I got in touch with them. I'm doing my due diligence on this. Like I'm not going to be like immediately going to the internet and going, hey, everybody, look, it's still broken. Like I'm going to deal with the company.
Like
I'm
going
to give them a chance. Yeah, like Matt would, amateur. I want to handle this as professionally as possible. And get, yeah, it means that I'm not going to get a video out next week. This is a process. It takes time. So fortunately, they've been super helpful. At this point, it's hard to gauge how much is because they know who I am and how much is just simply this is what they do for people. Every email.
Who you are. Come on.
They might not. I'm not going to assume
that. Put that ego away.
Listen, it's something I always have to think about, and I'm not sure. And I never know for sure, and I don't want to ever assume. But I get paragraphs in return emails with this situation. So I don't know what's going on. Anyway, they had a couple of issues, and my review will go into detail on that. They sent me the new one. The new one fixed one of the problems, but not totally fixed the second problem. And they're like, thank you for making us aware of this. And it is a fundamental design flaw in this thing. And it just, it's one of those things, like even with the last one, what happens in these companies? And I guess it's like, I don't work for a company like that. I don't run a company like that. I'm sure there's all kinds of red tape and hierarchy that leads to a product design not landing in the hands of a capable woodworker. And I don't mean that to insult their process, but this is something that any woodworker who spends any time with a miter gauge would eventually find this flaw. And I don't understand how this product gets to market without having gone through that filter. If it truly is a design flaw, because they made a change to the stop, and that's what it comes down to. And they've shortened the little guide bar. So you know how there's like the little T-nut that goes in, locks it into the track, but there's also a little bar that goes into the slot, which is kind of keeps it riding smooth, right? Mm-hmm. They've shortened that by about 2/3. It's a lot shorter now. So when you tighten it down, you got movement in your stop. Now, this is a stop that is amazing in terms of like rotate it once and you get 1/1000th movement of your stop head, right? So it's meant for accuracy, but I can get 12/1000ths of movement by just pushing on it and rotating it because it's not cinched down hard enough. And the reason is there's just not enough bearing surface in that little thing that glides into the slot. And they recognize that admitted it and said that they're, you know, they're working on solutions or looking at it. But why me? I'm a moron. Like, yeah. I'm just some ding dong that makes videos on YouTube. Why did no one else in the company find this problem? I don't understand.
Well, the real question is, did no one find it, or was like James Caan heading up their QC department and he shipped the book without four pages, you know?
Ship it.
Yeah. I mean, that's what you wonder. Somebody somewhere you would hope found it, but did somebody just say, go ahead and move it? Like maybe the person who made the decision to ship it isn't a woodworker and doesn't understand. Although I feel like that would be more egregious.
It's a stop. So it should be obvious that like
it's not just a stop. It might very well be one of the most accurate and easily controllable stops on the market that allows you to literally say, oh, I need to just go like just a skosh more. And you could just boop a thousandth.
Yeah.
Like that's a great stop. It's designed for that level of accuracy. So I don't know. I'm a little bit perplexed
it's not designed, but the problem is
you can move it 13 thousandths. Apparently,
the last one didn't do this. Their previous stop, which was one of the things that really wasn't broken. I mean, there was stuff they could have improved on it, but it wasn't broken to this extent. And this new one, they made a change and they shortened this thing that they didn't need to shorten, and now it doesn't really cinch down as well.
So, how quickly did you make this discovery?
Within about 10 minutes.
Okay. Yeah, that's kind of what I figured. So, you know, we're not rocket surgeons here. Just basically setting up and like, in other words, this could be uncovered in your typical internet unboxing video. Like this doesn't even require months of experience to uncover the bad.
No, not at all.
Wow.
No. And I mean, the other thing too, that was interesting was all the things that they had fixed and made better were stuff that was brought up in the review that I did, and it did make me chuckle because you guys might remember that there was a blowback and response to my review with people who were adamantly defending it. Like that. I stole the honor of their girlfriend. Yeah. And, so my logic here is like, so, hey, hold on a second. So they fixed a whole bunch of things that weren't broken. Like in their mind, right? These things weren't a problem according to these other people. Well, then why did they fix them? Why did they change those things? Because now they're not broken anymore. And I fully admit that.
It's a fully new version that they can market as a new improved version instead of just getting an updated version of the old one.
I think more importantly, you need to send them an invoice for consulting fees, because I guarantee you those people make like $300 an hour doing this type of design consultation.
Man, if they look, even if it's not me, there are plenty of people who would be better at this job than I would be. But if they did that, if they spent just a couple $100 to not just give a freebie to some guy who's just thankful that someone sent him something for free, so he's kissing their butt on the internet, send it to someone who actually is being paid to critically review this thing and isn't desperate for attention from a company. If you can do that, you're going to get better answers and end up with a better product. And it would cost them, you know, one simple consultation fee would do the trick. I don't know. I don't get it. I don't understand it. Anyway, that's my experience so far with Harvey. It's a whole heap of good, bad. I will say again, customer service has been top notch. That was something they dropped the ball on last time, and they are communication is fantastic. Speed at which they respond to me, fantastic. So that's all on the plus side. So Matt, you got a router table.
I did.
How did that go?
Well, I'll tell you about it, Mark. First of all, I'll tell you why I bought it, for the same kind of reason that you were just discussing. Of there's a lot of free product that's been pushed out there that has no. I honestly couldn't find any like unbiased information about most all of their products.
I'm going to pause you for a second.
Like,
I almost thought this was worthy of a dining table episode to talk about this. Is it ruined? Like the whole thing in terms of like people having tools and talking about them. Can you trust anybody anymore? Especially the people who are gaining popularity for discussing tools. There's just so much free stuff being thrown around. How do you trust anybody?
I think only I'm lucky in the fact that I understand how this stuff works behind the scenes. So when I open a video and I see the way that they're speaking or the way they're kind of going about it, I'm like, I know exactly what happened here. And I immediately am like, okay, this person has no integrity as far as their opinion. because it is 100% bias at this point. I can see right through it immediately, but some people go out there and they see that, like, oh, cool. They don't really understand, like, okay, technically this person's been compensated by that company, and now they have something to gain by presenting that product in a good light.
Mm-hmm.
But not everybody can see that because the disclosures aren't there.
Right, but you read the comments, and there are thousands of people who are licking it up.
That's why I say I'm lucky, because I can see through that immediately.
Yeah,
it's not just on YouTube. It's on. You can see it on every platform where these people clearly got something for free and they don't disclose it.
Yeah,
and it just drives me absolutely crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, this
it's
is an
interesting
ad.
Too.
It should be tagged as an ad.
Yeah,
right. And it's across every industry and every product line. But I find myself still being one of those people eating it up in an unfamiliar industry. Like if I'm truly like, yeah. I really don't know what product to buy. YouTube is great for feedback on that. And I do find myself kind of getting, there's no other word for it, suckered into it. But then mm-hmm. like I'll have those realizations later, Matt, where I'm like, well, wait a minute. Put your woodworking hat back on. This yeah, guy just got this free, you know, doohickey. Yep. Yeah. And it's everywhere. It's rampant. It's and every
unfortunately,
platform.
Unfortunately, too, with these reviews, they're just unboxings. I'm like, I don't really care, like, how...
I've got a little critch back there.
There's a little Cremona crawling by.
You guys got a pest problem?
I got a big pest problem. They're a large rodent.
Yeah, so they're usually thinly veiled unboxings. I don't want to say too much because I don't want to bring anybody's name up, but I had an opportunity recently to find out a little bit more about how some things work with some other popular folks on YouTube. And they're in some situations, and I guess I'm naive to think that this wasn't happening, but they are literally like part of an affiliate program, let's say, and they are essentially spoon-fed, not just the product, but almost a script and exactly what points to say and how to say it. And then at the end, push people to buy it. And that is a big part of their monetization strategy. And then you have other people who come to me and say, well, so-and-so said this is one of the best. And I'm like, why are you listening to them? What is wrong? Like, and I can't respond like that to people. They have faith in that. Like, I'm not going to, it's not my place. But it's so frustrating when you go like, how do you trust anything that person says to you? If they've done this multiple times, people just don't see it. It's wild.
In those instances, those examples, does that disclose that relationship in the video?
No.
Or anywhere?
Isn't that illegal?
No. See, the thing is, we know that this is like regulated by the FTC, right? This is something that we are technically supposed to be doing, but there's no ramifications if nobody actually enforces it. And the most legitimate companies will insist when you have a relationship with them that you do certain things to follow those rules.
They don't want to get in trouble either.
Yeah, it's the bigger companies that are usually very specific about that. Smaller companies, they don't. And it's in their best interest to keep it on the down low. You know, but I'm just like, you've got to be kidding me. The number of people who made purchases based on that is it's unbelievable.
And well, then there's another underground side of this where, because I get contacted by companies who honestly want my opinion, and they say, you don't have to do a video. Like, we don't. I'm not asking you to do a video or anything. I just honestly want your opinion. But there's also the content creator in me that's like, you know, people would actually like to hear about this. Like, I've gotten questions about this tool or that tool. And there's part of me then thinks like, well, here's an opportunity to make a video, but it's not. And then like, it's not really a sponsorship or anything. And I wonder how many other people have been in that same situation where they're just figuring, well, here's a content opportunity. Let me create this. And, you know, it's totally unofficial. So therefore I'm not disclosing it. But, you know, the court of public opinion is it's still a review. Doesn't really matter what transpired behind the scenes. Yeah. It's really frustrating. And I'll just speak personally. I want to be noble and say that I've never really done any of this stuff. And frankly, the hand tool market has always been so niche that there aren't a lot of big manufacturers out there who are knocking down my door for sponsorship opportunities.
I was going to say, they're also not giving stuff away for free very often.
No, very rarely. but I also, because of the fact that I have a W-2 job and I'm, you know, sometimes wishing that I wasn't working two jobs at the same time, but because I do have that, I've never tried to sponsor or monetize, you know, my YouTube stuff other than the typical AdSense. And what really frustrates me is the flack that I get for happening to take a moment And usually in my live broadcast, because then somebody says, hey, what about that tool? Let's be real. Yeah. Everybody, like, you could be demoing like the coolest technique ever. And all people really want to know is, what about the tool on the background that you didn't touch? Has nothing to do with what you're talking about. That's what they ask about. And, you know, so I get put in the position to give on the spot reviews of a tool. And 9 times out of 10, it's a tool that I've been using for 5, 6, 10 years. And I can actually speak with great authority that this is great. And then I get like the comments in the bottom. Oh, well, you know, your sponsor, you got that tool for free. And it's like, you know what? Yeah, I did get that Bad Axe saw for free 9 years ago.
Right. Yeah. If it wasn't good, you wouldn't have kept it around.
I'm still using it every day. Yeah. It does frustrate me. And I wonder, there have to be, maybe I'm naive in thinking there has to be content creators out there that are just like putting stuff up, you know, for the fun of it. No, that's probably not happening anymore. YouTube's just a big game.
Just for the money. Yeah. You know, it's something they need to do to keep that business going. And they've developed a content business, and that's what they do.
Getting too old for this. Quote Danny Glover.
Yeah, I hear you. All right. So, Matt, I totally derailed this. I'm so sorry.
This has been good. I like this.
Let's get back to that router table. What's the sitch?
So I've only been through the unboxing process so far. I haven't actually used.
Well, you should make a video of that.
Anything yet? That's why. Even
why don't you take us in your shop right now. Take us in your shop right now. We'll do it live on Wood Talk. It'll be great.
Yeah.
So I have initial impressions, I guess. That's all I can really share at this point. I've never actually, again, haven't used it. I can just tell you what I've experienced so far going into it. So I got the router table, the full router table package from them. So that is the mobile base stand thingamabobber, whatever you want to call that. Their cast iron top, which is designed to go into a router table wing, but you can mount it to the stand and use it standalone. They have two sizes for the two different width of saws that are out there. And then their fence, which is like the most expensive router fence you can buy. And then also got their dust boot thing that goes around the bottom of the router to contain all the dust or whatever.
Okay.
I thought everything was reasonably priced except the fence. Fence is $800. The cast iron top is $400. Wow. The stand is $200. And I think the dust bucket thing is $150 or something.
Okay. So
I think the fence is kind of out in outer space somewhere. I thought the top was reasonably priced for being cast iron. And they don't have a router lift, so you have to put your own lift in yourself and pick whatever you want. I got the Woodpeckers, the new one, the steel top one, so I can use magnetic featherboards anywhere on the whole table. Cast iron top, insert plate is all magnetic.
Nice.
So for the unboxing initial impressions, this is like the one little weird thing that irks me, is that they're marketing this as like a super premium level. Like, clearly someone has put some thought into, let's see what we can do to elevate the user experience. Everything comes out of the box really cleanly and nicely. You're greeted with this nice black envelope that has all your paperwork in it, that has like Harvey and like whatever the hell their logo saying is, something about it being amazing. And then you like, you start getting into it and you're like, it feels superficial as you get more into the assembly, because like the hardware is all in those generic, really thin, crappy baggies all mixed together. And you get into the instructions and you're like, who the hell printed these? And didn't do like any kind of proofreading. Didn't print them to see how they look in print. They just looked at them, like clearly they just looked at them on a computer. They can zoom in to whatever size they want. They didn't like think about like, oh, how's this going to look when it's scaled down to booklet size?
Yeah.
Because the graphics are too small the way they're printed to determine what the hell they're trying to show you.
Wonderful.
Because it all just kind of like, blech. So you can't see, okay, it's supposed to be like a bolt going through a hole with like a washer and a nut and a lock washer. And you're like, okay, all the lines line up. Like the line of the thing going through and the line of the thing that shows you going through line up together. So you can't actually see I'm like, the little details. I'm like, you got so, you were almost there with
so close
with the user experience. Then like, it's like, so I kind of felt a little let down on that one. So I'm like, it's superficial is probably the best way to describe the feeling of the unboxing and setup experience.
Yeah.
As far as things you have to assemble. The nice thing is a lot of things come pre-assembled. Like the fence was, I think it was fully assembled. You just take it out of the box and slap it on a table.
That's good.
Maybe put the stops on or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the initial impressions on that ridiculous fence is that I felt better when I opened it and pulled it out of the box than before I had opened it and seen like it in person. Because it is fairly substantial. It's like, it's pretty big and massive and has like really nice big knobs. So I feel like the user experience in the using the product will be really good on the fence. Mm-hmm. It's got the adjustable micro adjust thing to move the whole fence in and out by whatever thousandth at a time. It's got the adjustment to move the outfeed fence forward or back relative to the infeed fence, again, at a thousandth at a time. The T-slide things have bearings in it, so you're not just like sliding it in a slot. It's actually rolling in the slot, coming in and out, so it moves extremely smoothly. So, okay, so the products, they feel like they're good, but like, what else is going to happen now?
Yeah.
As I,
well, I'm interested as I in hearing more. It.
A lot of people ask about the flatness of the top. Across the whole top of it, I was within 2.5 thou, which I thought was pretty good. But I do have the front corner drops off by 12 thou, which is probably pretty incredibly insane, especially if it's supposed to be a cast iron tabletop wing that goes in a table saw. I don't really care because the way I'm using it, like it's on the outside. I think what happened is like they milled the miter slots in and that caused some distortion in the top or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's just on the outside area where the miter gauge slots are. So I'm like, I'm not that worried about it, but I would expect it to be like a little more in plane across the whole entire top.
Yeah. I mean, if it's going to go out, that's probably the best place.
Yeah.
In terms of like actually affecting your work.
It's not
still,
something I
think
care
that
about.
The top would have been milled flat after the slots have been routed.
It might've been, like milled too quickly. Didn't have any kind of stress relief between millings or true. Didn't, who knows? I'm not a metallurgist. We've talked about our metallurgy skills
not?
In the past. Shannon is definitely not a metallurgist. That's historically accurate.
I don't even know what metal is, so worse off than both of you.
And then the other thing I thought the stand's all aluminum, so it's really light.
Ooh, really?
But you're mounting a whole bunch of heavy stuff in the air. And it's a mobile three-point base. So I'm like, I don't think it's going to tip over. Maybe when you're moving
it's not giving you a lot of confidence.
I don't have a whole lot of confidence that it's not going to fall over when I'm like,
as long as you don't move it in anger,
shoving across the shop.
You have to take a deep breath before you move it, calm, and then move it.
But it is a really nice mobile base. It's got the one little pedal, you step down on it, and that just picks it up onto the wheels. Then you set it down onto all four legs. So, it feels fairly stable, but I'll probably put something on the shelf to make it a little bit heavier, I think. It's very, very top heavy.
Interesting. Okay.
Well, maybe with the router hanging down below,
it's still kind of up in the air, though.
It's still up there. Okay.
And you put a router lift in there and a cast iron top. And that the fence isn't that heavy, but it's big. There's a fairly good amount of weight up in the air on a base that weighs like maybe 20 pounds, if that.
And you don't want to run into like an extension cord on the floor rolling.
That would be the most worrisome. Is you're going, and then you hit something like a rock or extension cord or anything.
One of your kids.
Piece of crap on the floor. A small rodent, you know, whatever.
A small rodent crawling through. Yeah.
The sudden deceleration.
Yeah, could be bad.
It might fix that 12,000 out on the front corner.
That's
though,
true.
It tips over.
Just give it a little knock in the other direction.
Well, see, and I think that's one of the interesting things about this. We talked about the deep industry products and the more premium products that go mostly to pros and to industry professionals. Harvey is one of those companies that's making the premium on the consumer grade stuff, in the sense that like you are paying a premium. People do expect a good unboxing experience. They expect good instructions. Compare it to something like a newer company, relatively newer, like SawStop. You know, SawStop, from top to bottom, like their instructions are fantastic.
That's the pinnacle of user experience.
Yeah, if you ever want to, if you're any companies that are doing this, go see what SawStop's doing. They'll show you how it's done. But if you are dealing with consumers, people value that. They really like that. And I think Harvey is in that position and certainly seems to be trying to be put into that position where that manual should have been one of the best things you've ever laid your eyes on.
That's
right?
What
I mean, look at the pictures. Look at the pictures on their website. It's all like beautifully photoshopped fake pictures. Like, I don't know if they started with the original product and then doctored them to look fake, but it's so nicely processed and edited.
And the sales pages, like, they're really well laid. Someone's paying attention to that actual layout of the page and then having all the information nicely presented to you as you're shopping.
Yeah.
That's why I'm like,
yeah,
it's very well done. They're so close.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, just take it all the way or don't take it anywhere at all.
Yeah. Yeah. You gotta close the deal.
Maybe
close the circle.
Maybe it's highly possible that they didn't actually do any of that Like they did the web page, you know, their marketing team and developers did all that stuff. But as far as the technical writer is, you know, outsourced to wherever the motor was built.
It's probably for the manufacturer because it's all import. So I'm sure it was written in Chinese originally and it's just been translated through some translator that no one proofread it because I'm like, I get what you're saying here, but the way you worded this, this is not a native English speaker writing this.
Yeah,
and this is phrased very oddly.
They'd have the resources to make this happen. You know, there is a U.S. side to this business that. But again, we don't know the corporate structure. We don't know who has control, and they may be all going like, oh, "I wish we could fix this manual," but so and so, you know, won't let us. I don't know, but
they won't.
Again,
let us.
Matt could very well be the first woodworker in history to actually read instructions. So
that's true. Yeah, I mean, most
they
of them
recognize their target demographic. Just throws the manual aside. So we'll get to that later.
The SawStop experience spoiled me for the rest of my life. It was the same thing. Like the product pages are amazing. The documentation is amazing. The pre-sale process is top notch. And then you get the thing. You start unboxing. Like they put care into how it was going to be assembled by that person when they received it. All the fasteners are in that bubble pop thing. Everything's labeled for every single step. Here's the exact bolts you're going to use in that step, all nicely laid out. And the instruction manual is a spiral-bound book with actual pictures that walk you through every single step really nicely, really cleanly with detailed instructions of what you're doing and why you're doing it. And I'm like, what the hell?
It's like, why doesn't everybody do this?
Just do that, please.
It's just not that hard. Yeah,
it's not.
Well... Do you guys know who does know how to write an instruction manual?
Besides SawStop?
There's only one other company.
They sell SawStop there. Is.
Yeah, it's Rockler. Rockler knows how to make an instruction manual. And actually, I'm not even kidding. Like, if you ever buy a Rockler product, they have good instruction manuals.
They're actually pretty good.
It's true, they do.
With, like, you know, things that are definitely written in a way you can understand with pictures, you can clearly see what's going on. So,
and I actually bought a Rockler shop stand and did assemble it. So, and
how was that?
The pictures were great. I could read everything.
Cool.
Worked great. And it was blue.
You can see where the bolts were supposed to go.
It's mostly steel. Yeah, it was steel.
Okay.
And aluminum side panel.
Better.
Okay.
That's the other crappy thing about it being aluminum is now I can't stick all my stuff to the stand.
Yeah, you were all excited about the steel and magnetic potential for this thing. And now it's just aluminum.
I'm going to have to plate it. Just steel.
That's a good idea. Oh, man. Well, what a bummer. Okay. Well, yeah, let's get to... Let's talk about grand openings at Rockler. If you haven't been to a Rockler store lately, you may be missing out. Rockler has been expanding and remodeling many of its stores throughout the country. You'll find an extensive lumber selection, top power tools and accessories, dust collection, router tables, T-Track, hardware, and more. All stores also host a variety of classes for woodworkers of all skill levels. You won't want to miss the latest grand openings for Rockler's Cary, North Carolina, and Brentwood, Tennessee stores, with events happening every Saturday in January through mid-February. They're also hosting a grand reopening event on Saturdays for their, anyone know how to pronounce that? Novi, Michigan?
Novi,
Michigan?
Novi. You're asking me like I pronounced things correctly.
Yeah, well, I mean, we got a, I don't know, maybe a 1 in 5 shot that you might. So that one good? In Michigan.
Right.
Yeah, I think so. I've been rating it and I have the stats on it. So in Michigan, that store, what do they have? The reopening, grand reopening event starting on January 27th all the way through mid-February. And you can find all the details there at rockler.com.
Yay, Rockler.
Yay, Rockler. Cool. I skipped kickback in case you guys were wondering because we went on so long.
I got
chit-chatting.
That.
Okay.
Basically, people said we listen to the show a lot. Thank you for listening to the show a lot. That was the kickback. So
Yeah, let's do it. Let's real quick. Patty, 31,000 minutes. Listening to our show. We were talking about the
26K,
what was it? Yeah. Spotify tallies. So Patty says 31,000. Dan said, where did he say it? Did he give us a number? Oh, he doesn't know. He's like, it's at least 30,000.
It was this big, listening. I swear.
It was so big. You guys should have seen how many minutes I had. He listened to even our old Vanderlist days with DVD reviews and stuff that we did.
Nice. I think
he called... What do we call those? Board meetings or something?
I feel like that would be really cringy to go back and listen to now.
anything involving me and Vanderlust was cringy. So
yeah, that's
skip
right,
the first
Mark.
Couple hundred episodes. That's right. That's right, Matt. All right. So let's get to some questions. I got the first one here from Justin. He says, first off, love the show. Look forward to each episode. I'm a power tool woodworker, but I'm learning hand tools a bit at a time to become more of a hybrid woodworker. Copyright credit to Wood Whisperer. Ooh, look at that. I think I just got 35 cents in my account.
Very nice.
I have all the tools I need for milling stock except for a jointer. I currently don't have the funds or space for a standalone jointer, so I have been looking at a benchtop model. But I understand that there's a limit to the size of the boards you can joint
on
a jointer.
Let's talk about this again. Let's talk about benchtop jointers again.
Oh, no. Let's not talk. We got a different focus on this one. Relax. It'll be
fine.
Easy, man. I've considered maybe getting a jointer plane, but those are only so big as well. Why would there be a limitation on board length for a power jointer if the jointer plane only comes in a couple of sizes? What's the difference? And would you recommend a benchtop jointer or a jointer plane? And at first, I didn't really totally understand the question at first. And I was like, wait a minute. This actually is a great question from a beginner perspective. If you're trying to understand this, it's a fantastic question. So I'm going to see if I could explain this quickly. You guys supplement me if I don't get it right.
Nah, you can hold your flail. It's fine.
Okay.
You're on your own.
Yeah, you prefer me flailing. if you are using a power jointer, the jointer is static. The tables are dictating how much support you have for the workpiece, and you're taking one long pass start to finish on the board. So if the board has a big cup in it, that's an 8-foot board, it's really hard for that tool to be able to get the flatness that you need. It's just kind of, by the time it's referencing, it's still referencing on the infeed and it's now contacting the blades, but it's going to start moving as the board changes how it interacts with the infeed table. So you'll never be able to get a flat surface unless it's already pretty darn flat to begin with. When you're talking about a hand plane, you're taking the cutting tool to the wood, and you're not doing everything in just one straight pass. You can address an edge. We're just talking about the edge of a board. You can address the edge of the board in sections. So maybe you have a hill in the middle, right? You can hit that with the hand plane, knock that down, and then eventually your goal is to get a nice clean pass all the way across the surface. Imagine if you could. If you could lift your jointer, your floor standing jointer, I mean, Matt's real strong. I think he could probably do this.
This is why you need a benchtop jointer, so you can lift it.
There you go. You get a benchtop jointer, you keep it plugged in, you turn it on, you flip it upside down, and you've got your board in your workbench, and you were using, actually think of it like
you're describing a power planer is what you're describing.
A power hand planer, right? You just basically knock down the high spots, and then once everything is pretty flat, then you can go over the whole surface and make your way across. So this is why we only have two sizes mostly for hand planes, jointer planes, a 7 and an 8. And you don't really need anything other than that because that's enough reference surface that you can take off those high spots and then even everything out in one pass when it's all fairly even. So I think it's just the fundamental difference between taking a board to a static, immobile tool versus taking the mobile tool that's smaller and using it to kind of hit different parts of the board until you get something that's fairly flat. So in terms of giving you a recommendation, I'm not going to say get a hand plane to do this unless you really, really want to, or the jointer isn't in the cards for a long time. Because if you learn how to use it and you use it correctly, you could do a lot with that jointer plane. Obviously, woodworkers and weirdos like Shannon have been doing it for ages. But if you really think you're going to want to do the power tool thing, that jointer is going to be real handy to have around. So I would encourage you to get the power jointer. But if it's not in the cards, yeah, of course, take a look at the jointer plane. Go watch some videos at the Renaissance Woodworker and figure out how to use it.
I would amend that and say, don't buy a jointer plane, but buy a jack plane.
Mm.
He says he has all the tools for milling stock except a jointer. So I'm assuming he has a planer in there. And we've all seen how to flatten boards with a planer, either building a sled or the hybrid method that I use is using a hand plane to knock off those high spots to get it to like not rock on the planer bed. And then run it through and you can get a flat and parallel faces. So really it comes down to the edges that he's trying to clean up. You know, I mean, certainly you can flip a board on edge and run it through a planer to a certain extent. So if his thing is I want to use a power joiner in order to get a square and flat edge, a hand plane will do that a lot easier for you than trying to flatten a face. Like I wouldn't buy a joiner plane in order to flatten the face of the board. If you have a planer already, like if you're using a hand plane to flatten the face of the board, you're not a hybrid woodworker anymore. You're a nutcase like me. But if you're I know so many beginners to hand planes that buy a joiner plane because there is this idea, like with power joiners, the longer the better, right? So I should buy a 22 or 24 inch plane. It is a difficult plane to use. It requires a lot of technique to get it done right, and you will screw up a board much faster with a longer, heavier hand plane. I would highly recommend if you're joining the edges, get a jack plane. It's a heck of a lot easier to work with. The technique is easier to understand. It's much more functional, and it's a utility player. It is a jack of all trades plane. You'll be able to find it for a lot of other purposes, and you won't struggle quite so much. Plus, if your plane is 15, 18 inches long and you've got that blade projecting a thousandth or two thousandths or five thousandths of an inch, the tolerance of the flatness that you're getting out of that is way flatter than anything you need. So adding that extra 6 inches of length to the plane is going to, yes, increase your flatness, but to what end? Like, who are you trying to impress? It just doesn't have to be that flat. And I think you'll struggle and get more turned off to hand planes with a joiner than you would with a jack.
Well, and he expressed his intention to kind of go into the hybrid woodworking arena. It sounds like a jointer is in his future in some way.
Yeah.
I don't have a joiner plane.
Yeah. You'll never use it again once you got your power joiner. Hell, I barely use my joiner plane.
Matt, what do you use yours for?
Just like feeling powerful.
Shaving? I know what you use it for. Taking pictures.
There
promo
you go.
Pictures.
I do use it for that too. I use it a lot.
It's good to like
for,
nestle it into your hip and just hold it there and pose. It works great.
Yeah.
I use it for waterfall joints. Is what I usually use it for.
Yeah, there's so
like
that's
okay.
a great,
doing a minor
great use.
Chase work.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I need that thing to be like pretty darn perfect. And the one thing, biggest advantage of the joiner plane is it has so much mass that if you give it, it's got the inertia. Once you give it some inertia, like you. Any kind of weird changing in the grain, any kind of changing the density, you don't really feel it like into your arms. You're utilizing the momentum of the tool itself. It has a very different feel than using any other normal size plane where like you can feel any little bit of drag you hit along the way. The jointer plane just like glides the whole time because it's just you're pulling the inertia out of the plane to make that cut.
You're just cementing my point that it causes bad technique.
I know.
You want that feedback. You want that tactile feedback. I get what you're saying, and I totally agree with you. And I think in an experienced hands, that mass is fantastic. But for somebody who first picks up a plane, they're like, oh, yeah. And they just, they're throwing the thing out of flat, and they don't even realize it because it's like, it's playing on autopilot. This mass is great.
In a China shop situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is and it isn't either because it's so long. Like, you're going to be planing air for a while.
Yeah.
Until you actually get really into the flatness that a plane can actually get to. So that might be frustrating as well. Cause you're like, I'm not hitting anything. And you start cranking the wheel down. And you're like,
you start advancing the blade
12 thou. And it's like, okay, way too big of a cut now. What the hell? You wheel back out and like, you can't find the cut. So that it definitely is not a beginner plane. I agree with Shane on that one.
So real quick, if you had to give this guy advice, Justin, if he, let's say budget wise, either benchtop jointer, which I don't think any of us are really a big fan of, benchtop jointer or a jointer plane.
Do we decide if we're doing face jointing or edge jointing?
Well, he's going to have to do both, right? I mean, he's got the planer,
so
he's got other
specifically?
Options.
Like, it's like...
Just woodworking.
I recommend, honestly,
very nice.
Like, the answer is super secret option number 3, your board shorter.
Yeah, this make is smaller projects.
This is just something I'm going to
shorter
alienate.
Then glue them back together. You know, it's fine.
It's not an episode unless I piss somebody off. So I'm going to alienate the power tool woodworkers and say I see so many of you power tool guys jointing like 9 and 10 foot boards. Like, are you making a 9 and 10 foot part? Like, are
Maybe
you making?
They are.
If you are, then fine. But like outside of like. A bed, like a bed rail, or you know,
people
possibly like
tables, you know,
a conference table or something like that. Rarely are furniture parts get much beyond 36 to 48 inches. There are those furniture forms, like we just mentioned, conference tables, beds, but like this is and I kind of want to blame Norm, like in the TV shows. It's like they bring the rough lumber in and you set up your shop so that it flows into your milling tools and you mill your boards flat and you do the edges and you get it S4S'd and then you take it over. And I guess, you know, because it's safer to cross cut on a table saw when it's already milled, not safer. It's safe. don't cross cut on a table saw roughs on boards, but there's so few people who are talking about, okay, I've got this board. I know I'm going to make any of these parts. Let's cross cut it down to size because you're going to remove less material if you're joining a 36 inch board than an 8 foot long board. And I see so many people
doing that work. I think this kind of comes into like this weird like crossover from production shops and like actual furniture shops. Production shops, no one's face jointing anything. They're going S2S on the planer. They'll hit the edge on the jointer, or if they have a straight line rip saw, they'll go through there and they collar parts that way. So when someone's needing a 36 part, a 24 inch part, an 18 inch part, they just pull from the same stock. They have all dimensional sizes.
Most millwork houses are set up. They've got a milling department and all they do is just mill lumber. Yes. And they have general ideas of thicknesses are going to be required. The door shop is running. We're going to need to start with 10 quarter material, et cetera. And it gets cut down from there. This does not apply in this world. And I see so many people.
I agree. I 100% agree. I just think it just comes from like the carpentry world trying to do furniture.
Yeah.
To piss people off.
Well, here's the problem. I don't watch anybody really. So I haven't seen this. Like every one of my projects basically starts with breakdown, breaking a rough board down. And then I start milling. So, but who are these people? Who are you guys watching that's doing this?
It's not watching. It's just the industry.
I know. Shannon's talking about specifically watching people.
I've seen it done on YouTube. I've also seen people who shouldn't say, let me use a different word there. I have people come to me asking this question all the time. Okay. And they're like, how am I supposed to joint this 8 foot board? And similar to Justin is saying, you know, do I have to have like a really long board? And he actually doesn't think a joiner plane is long enough at 24 inches because he's got these long boards. Like, why is that not long enough? Like, read between the lines there. He's trying to joint boards that are so long that he thinks a 24 inch long plane isn't long enough. But then I've got lots of people. Every time I've done a live thing on YouTube, every time I do a live office hours thing in the hand tool school, I get people who show up and are asking questions about how I'm dealing with long boards. You know, I used to have a power joiner and I could deal with it then. I'm like, whoa, 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 why? Like, what are you building that you need a 9 foot board? And there's a lot of people out there who, when I tell them, I say this all the time. It's one of the things in the hand tool school make fun of me for this. One of the things I say all the time is the fastest way to flatten a board is with a handsaw. Doesn't matter the plane, that saw cutting the board in half will flatten it way faster than any plane ever could do. And it's become this like this dogma in the hand tool school, but people still come to me and I tell them that and they smack their forehead like, why didn't I think of that? Because somebody is told them, Norm, you know, or, you know, I don't know why I'm blaming Norm at this point, because even Norm is outdated. These people aren't watching Norm on YouTube.
Fight back.
Yeah, probably. But we're also, I mean, just look at this Harvey discussion we've had. There is a market now for power tools that are multiple thousands of dollars. There is a market for pro-level tools at the consumer level. Like Harvey is trying to straddle the $100,000 machine that I play with at the Millwork House and the Delta table saw, you know, the consumer brand. There now is this market for people to have bigger shops, to have industrial sized tools at the consumer level. So we've got bigger and bigger joiners, bigger and bigger planers. Hell, I have a 20 inch planer. I'm a hand tooler and I have a 20 inch planer. Tell me what's wrong with the universe in that respect. So this leads people to thinking, I've got these bigger machines. I ought to be able to go and buy a 10 foot board, join it into this perfectly S4S board, and go from there. You know, I do milling and I'm done. No more milling. Now it's joinery. And I go from 9 foot board to joinery. And it's like, what the hell? Like there's very little thought that goes into that. And I've totally taken us down a rabbit hole, I realize.
No, you're totally right. And going back to what are we on? We're still on the first show. God. Yeah. All right. So
this is our last question, maybe.
In the beginning, when I talked about the Ava's vanity project, doing that sort of thing, that methodology is awful. Not only is it like inefficient, but it could land you in hot water when you go to cut those pieces down and they're already at their final thickness and final dimension. And then they're going to go crazy because you just cut the board down and released a bunch of tension. You know, like it's just a recipe for disaster. So maybe Justin, I don't know if you're listening to this, maybe you are thinking about these long boards that aren't really necessary for your project and you haven't thought about cutting them down. Maybe this will solve some problems for you.
The only other thing I will say is when you do run into that situation where you have to have the 8-foot board, the longer the board is, the easier it is to clamp out bow. Just going to say it.
True.
Like,
yeah.
You know, you're going to, if you're going to have an 8-foot board, there's probably going to be some infrastructure in there. Think of a bed. Mm-hmm. You've got a cross rail somewhere in there. That cross rail and the joinery can pull that bow out. And in fact, you probably should rely upon that because if it doesn't, that board's going to sag over time. Yeah. Like if there were no support. So the longer the board is, the less flat it has to be because the more flexible the board is.
Yeah. Make sure you check your bed rails for crown. Crown your bed rails.
Go. Good idea. There you go. All right, Matt, let's get out of here. Hurry up.
You want me to actually do this? Okay.
Let's go fast. Go fast.
How long will the show be? Okay, this is from Axel. I'm just going to paraphrase this. Axel lives in Northern Ontario. His shop's an outbuilding. It's 20 by 20. It's built cheaply. OSB floor is sitting on posts on a gravel pad. He needs to replace the roof. And after he does all these things, he's wondering if it's worthwhile to finish the interior. All his previous workshops were 2x4 framing with 3/4 ply wedged into a corner of the basement storage closet. So basically, he's used to a shop that's an unfinished framed building with open stud bays. And he's asking, is it worth it to add some kind of finishing to the face of the walls to make it more picturesque, pleasant, and cozy? So,
hell yes.
That's what Instagram I'm worthy. Like, fine. Okay, next question.
All right, Shannon, you're next.
Yes. But I lived through that, like, over the years, I realized the shop is my, like, my space. It's my place to go to feel inspired and feel happy about it. And when I just got started, I didn't really care what it looked like because it was just like, I'm there. I don't really care if the walls are open and ugly and it's dark and dim and dank. But the more time you spend out there and the more you realize, like, this is my, like, go-to space to feel good about myself and to feel motivated to do things, the more I want the space to reflect that really inviting, clean, bright space that I like. So my shop is fully drywalled. Everything's, the walls are painted white. The ceilings are white. I got a crap ton of lights in there. And that's the space that I really like. Do what you want. I definitely, a little bit of investment in like prettification of your space, I think has some really good return on just you being excited and motivated to actually go out to the shop.
And, there's a little girl.
And work. Thank you for these keys.
Is that a
key? The back door that we don't have anymore. Okay.
All right. Good. Good to know.
That in the garbage. Good deal. I'm a big believer in this too. You spend a lot of time in that space, especially if it's a full-time gig if it's your hobby. You're there for fun. And there's also functional reasons to have, you know, decent walls and things that are fun to look at. I had a couple guests come into the shop recently, and I found myself kind of explaining, like, why this is not more of a utilitarian space. It is very utilitarian, but, like, if you're expecting this to look like a cabinet shop and you see a picture of, you know, George from Seinfeld posing on a bed in his underwear, like, what is going on here? It's like, yeah, but this is my fun space. I want to look around and see things that I recognize, that I enjoy, that inspire me to come into the space and do it again tomorrow. Yeah, I think that's a super important thing.
Heck yeah. Yeah, I've got limited edition Spider-Man pencil sketches framed on the wall in my shop.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that, man.
It's good stuff, man. All right, this question is from Luke. I subscribe to the hybrid woodworking style. I have a number 5 plane.
Cha-ching. It's an
absolute 35 cents.
Todd, really, you need to throw in a little cha-ching sound effect every time hybrid woodworker is mentioned.
No.
Yeah. And some sort of little like stock ticker that rolls across the bottom of the screen. That'd be good stuff. Total.
No.
Anyway, Luke has a number 5 plane. It's an absolute workhorse. However, he feels like he needs a dedicated smoothing plane and was wondering if a number 3 or a number 4 would be a better complementary plane to the number 5. This is obviously an opinion. You're going to hear 17 different answers from 17 different woodworkers. Personally, I go with the number 3. Since you already have a number 5 and it's already working for you, that the size difference from the 5 to the 4, it's significant. But if you're looking for a dedicated smoothing plane, what you want your dedicated smoothing plane for, it's prep before finish, right? You're cleaning up the wood. You're making it pretty. It's not about flattening at that point. So the number 3 is a shorter wheelbase on it. It's going to roll in and out of the contours of the board. It's going to clean up the tear out a lot faster. You're sacrificing a little bit of mass, but I think mass in a smoothing plane, it's not a negligible thing, but I think it's highly overrated. There's so many people out there espousing, you know, super massive smoothing planes. Yes, it works, but a sharp blade is going to work too. A tight mouth is going to work. A close chip breaker is going to work. The mass is just kind of an extra thing. For your typical boards, if all you're doing all day long is working with gnarly jungle wood, then maybe mass might come into play. But personally, I love my number 3. I use it way more than my number 4 because it's shorter, it's more agile, and it cleans up tear out in difficult to reach spots. I don't have to worry about flattening. I just get to smooth it.
Okay. Very good.
Okay.
Okay, well, family-owned since 1954, Rockler is your go-to source for high-quality and innovative woodworking tools, finishing supplies, hardware, lumber, and expert advice. Whether you're building a simple bookshelf, a custom desk, or new kitchen cabinets, Rockler has everything you need to make your next project a success. Visit Rockler.com and use the code WOODTALK, that's all one word, to receive free shipping on most orders over $49. And remember to head to Rockler.com/WOODTALK to enter for your chance to win a $250 gift card.
$250.
Oh, Red. I was having flashbacks to the Micro Machine Man while you were reading that.
Yeah, that's great. Go look that up. Those are fun.
Send in your questions, folks. We can't do the show without your questions, or we could, but you really don't want to listen to that. So go to woodtalkshow.com, fill out the form, or just send us an email, record a voicemail, and attach it to your email, and send it to woodtalkshow@gmail.com. That's how you get us. That's how the show gets built. Keeps us from having to work. We just pull things out of the inbox, paste them in here, and then read them. Mm-hmm. It's great. We love it.
We love it. Great system we developed here. Right. Well, thank you for listening, everybody. Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone. We'll catch you next time.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.